You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Bernadette Peters.
Hey, I'm Anissa Foles.
Hello, hello, hello.
I'm Fergie L. Philippe.
Hi, I'm Eliza Ullman.
Hola, soy Florencia Cuenca.
Y yo soy Jaime Lozano.
Hi, this is L. Morgan Lee.
It's Alex Brightman from Broadway and beyond.
Hi, this is Joe Iconis.
And this is Lauren Marquez.
Y estás escuchando.
And you're listening to
B-Way Show.
B-Way Show.
B-Way
Show.
The podcast.
Hey, friends. Welcome to B-Way Show, the podcast. Your home for theater conversations from a passionate Broadway fan and reporter. I'm your host, Shoshana, and I want to start off by emphasizing Black Lives Matter, period.
Show must go on.
It's show time. Get it? Because I'm Beetlejuice and she's show. Anyway, B-Way Showtime. You know, the whole being a podcaster thing. Listen or else.
This week's guest is Drew Gasparini. Drew is currently developing a number of new stage musicals, including the Broadway-bound musical adaptation of The Karate Kid and It's Kind of a Funny Story, booked by Alex Brightman, who he's also working with on The Whipping Boy. Drew was part of the infamous award-winning Super Bowl publicity stunt, Skittles commercial, The Broadway Musical, hit list on Smash, and has an incredible song cycle out, We Aren't Kids Anymore. Catch his live performances with The Morons, as well as Drew Gasparini and friends. He's a fellow BPN host, so make sure to listen to Now We're Talking with Drew Gasparini. Here's our conversation from May 19th, 2020, recorded for my live YouTube series, The Show Must Go On, Line. Enjoy.
Go live.
You're a one-man operation, though. This is amazing.
So hello, everyone. So,
hi.
This is perfect. This is exactly the feeling that we'll be getting for this whole chat. It's like, go with the flow.
Go chill. With the flow, man. I'm in my beach gear. We're relaxing. It's good. It's a sunny day.
Yes. A beautiful, beautiful time. So hello, everyone. Thank you for coming on The Show Must Go On Line. Today's guest is Drew Gasparini. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've
been... It's a nice day out here.
Yeah. Well, so where are you now? Where in the world?
I am in New York City. I am... Well, that's not true. I'm in New York. I'm in Queens. I'm in Astoria. But you know when you just chalk it up to New York City so it's easier to explain to people who don't know what Astoria is? Astoria is a part of Queens that's right over the bridge from Manhattan. I can see Manhattan from right over the river. It's amazing. I love my digs. That's my plant. I got a cubby situation. Astoria, where cubby situations happen. Yeah. That's right. Shout out to IKEA. What? Yeah.
What?
But yeah, that's where I am.
Awesome. Yeah, and I'm here in Washington State.
Washington State. Excellent. Very nice. Where in Washington State are you from?
So I'm from New York, but I'm currently at my boyfriend's place, and he is Arlington. We have a dog who's chilling outside right now.
Big, you got a situation. You got a nice situation.
Yeah, and we have a backyard, which, like, I live in Queens, actually, so I feel that. And we do not have a backyard there, so
that's
it would have been very different. And I get a dog, so, like, we're all
That's
happy.
A much better situation, because I, in lieu of a backyard, I have a off-limits rooftop that I go onto regardless of it being off-limits. And you know why it's off-limits? Let me tell you why it's off-limits. It's off-limits because of me, because years ago, on top of this roof, I, like, left a bunch of wine bottles up there because I was having... Because I was having myself a silly time. Anyway, so I got busted by the landlord. And I still go up there. I'm a horrible influence. Just disregard all authority, kids.
Come for the music, stay for the wine talk.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Yes. I do miss a good New York rooftop so much. Like
it
that
is it's a very specific kind of rooftop. It's not like any other, it's not like an LA rooftop. It's a very, you know, it's a different kind of experience in New York. I think so.
It sure is. This is such a tangent, but I played Quidditch for 6 years. Yep. pretty cool. This is gonna, you were like, she was cool up until this moment. But we would have Quidditch parties on a New York City rooftop on the Upper West Side, and it was incredible.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. Wow, that's neat.
Yes,
It'd be cooler if you could ride around on brooms and stuff.
Well, that's the thing. We did ride around on brooms. We just couldn't fly yet.
That's even worse. Oh, show. That's even so worse. You're just like hopping around on.
No, you're running. It's like a very competitive athletic sport.
Man, it'll be in the Olympics 2021. Quidditch will be that. Can I swear on this?
Please, but can I just tell you, I was the director of videography for the Quidditch Summer Games in Oxford, England, as the Olympics were coming to the city. So it's
awesome. You got credentials, man.
I had all of these ideas, like, this is how we'll start. Go with the flow.
That's good. That's the mentality. Yeah, I like that.
Yes.
Hey friends, future me popping in this chat to say while Harry Potter was a big part of growing up and I made amazing friends playing Quidditch, I 100% stand with the trans community and in no way support the horrible actions by the author of the series. Back to the show.
Saying hello to everyone who's watching at home. I see you.
Hello.
Anacog.
Anacog sounds like a Pokemon.
True. Were you part of that? Like the trying to find the Pokemon Go?
No, but here's a real quick story about Pokemon Go. That this was the deciding factor. Should I get this game? And it was when I saw my friend F. Michael Haney. I'm just going to out him about it. He loved the game when it came out. He was obsessed with it. We were all at a bar waiting for him for his like 30th birthday or something, like a birthday party. And when he arrived, his brother showed up. Was like, "Happy birthday, man! Oh, I got to go outside. There's a Mika Maka outside. I gotta go get it." We're like, "What? You just left your brother's birthday to go find a fake Pokemon? What is happening?" It was crazy. That Pokemon culture gets crazy.
It does. Yeah, I never jumped on board. I mean, you would think with my nerd culture that would be right up my alley, but...
Well, you gotta pick your nerd thing. You can't be an all-encompassing nerd. That just makes you a sellout.
True.
You know what I mean? You can't be Harry Potter and Pokemon.
No, that would be way too much.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yes. So, someone is asking, JNJ18, love it, awesome. Right. Hi there, are there any updates for It's Kind of a Funny Story or any other projects with this guy named Alex Brightman? I just added that little snarky part.
I was like, it's probably Alex typing the question.
Hey, Drew, is there any updates?
Hey, just want to make sure. And while you're at it, don't you think he's handsome? Don't you think Alex is like the most handsome dude? Last two weeks ago or so, we had the 54 Below is doing this hashtag 54 at home kind of series where they're re-airing archival footage of some concerts that have done their thing at 54 Below. And we did, it's kind of a funny story there. It's the adaptation of the Ned Vizzini novel that Alex Brightman and I have been writing for the last several years. We were commissioned by Universal to do this. And that concert was basically our proof of concept to show Universal. And the concert blew up. The videos blew up. And then we re-aired the videos, or the entire concert in its entirety. No one's seen it since that day in 2017. And it was just such a really cool way to reignite some excitedness about the property. We were about to announce something right before the pandemic started. And I can't say what it is that we were going to announce. But all I will say is it was another big step in our development. And it was with a very humongous, very reputable theater company. So there are things in motion. Once the germs go away,
right,
we will get right back to it. But as of yesterday, Alex and I were just texting about it today. I rewrote the opening number, not changed at all, but like we really fixed this opening number and I'm really, really proud of it. So we're still cooking. We're still cooking with grease, man.
That is so exciting. Yeah, I love those 54 Below concerts at home, however
They're great. Hashtag baby. Yeah, no, I love it because 54 Below especially has become such a home for so many artists in New York. And it's where a lot of composers start cutting their teeth nowadays. And, you know, it's like the club that you, it's like, the, it's the first time a writer shares his music. It's always at like a 54 Below kind of stage. So those little venues being shut down is devastating when your entire career is built on those concerts. Any little prong that comes out of your career that turns into like the Broadway thing or the film thing, it all starts in those little venues. So it's really, it's devastating when your playground gets taken away basically for an artist. So yeah, I think it's really cool that 54 Below does all those things. We're really honored that they asked us to air the thing. The excitement was palpable. Even rewatching the video was so fun. There was like hundreds and hundreds of people from like Peru and London and Australia and Japan and Italy and all these places who are fans of the concert that we did years ago, which is mind-boggling to me. It was so cool. So yeah, Alex and I are doing good with that. And the other one that we're working on right now is called The Whipping Boy. It's an adaptation of this cute little novel, The Whipping Boy, Sid Fleischman's novel. And we're adapting it. We were trying to make a stage piece, but now we're pitching to studios to make it an animated musical, motion picture.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're going for it, man. If we can sell a movie pitch during a pandemic, I think that'd be a plus. We're going to. Pat on my back already. Absolutely. Feather in my cap, gold star on the bandana. Let's go. I'm all about it.
Love it. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, I've said like different things like that where you just have to put it into existence. You have to say like, I'm going to do this, and then you'll do it.
Well, you know what, like Alex and I talked about this a lot back in the day when the year that he booked School of Rock is the year I signed my first Broadway contract with Warner Brothers. I was writing a show with them called Night Shift with Kathleen Marshall was our director. And it was, you know, Ron Howard was co-producing. It was a big thing. But the year that that happens, our lives changed, our careers shifted, and then everything after that stopped being surprising anymore. Like, if he booked a movie, if he booked a TV show, it's like, oh yeah, duh. It's like, you're like, yay, good for you, man. But you're also like, oh, that's awesome. So you want to get coffee or something this week? Because like, when someone announces good news after the first big good news comes, you're like, good, it should be this way. You know, you've been working your ass off for years and years and years, and it started to pay off. That's good. It should continue to pay off. So putting it out in the universe is never a weird thing because once it starts happening, it's not so weird. You know, right. You never get surprised by the success.
But like,
for the stars, kids.
Yes. I think I told Alex this when he was on, but I was a reporter in West Texas, CBS 7 News.
Oh my God. Like what a multiversed person you are. So many hats.
Yeah. I was a sports reporter. I covered Friday Night Lights. It was crazy. Yeah.
Oh my God, and now you're here talking to Broadway composers and Alex Brightman? What's the matter with you?
I've always called myself like a Renaissance girl, right? Like I love the entertainment, I love the community.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm so fascinated, like, you know, I wanted to be a soccer player when I was younger, and then I realized like that wasn't going to happen because I'm not talented in that way, but I was like, maybe I can interview them.
Wow, I like that the next... Well, I can't play. What's next? I'll ask them questions.
Yeah.
That is the greatest, like, next level down. There's not like, I could coach or I could work for the team. It's like, no, I would just want to talk to them.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
As, like, Hamilton as it is, like, I just wanted to be in the room where it happened.
I get that. You know, you picked two very interesting fields. Talk about community. Like, what brings people literally, like, completely hand in hand together more than sports and theater? You know,
yeah.
I think that's so you've gone down two pretty cool paths, I would say.
I think so. My friend Andy's like, get it, show. Because she was there like the whole journey. Like, I was there. I decided not to renew my contract. I drove across the country to New York. And then I created BY Show.
BY Show. Represent brand representation.
Exactly. That's what we're all about here.
She's not wearing her swag today, folks, because she gave it all away to Ice-T when he was on her show. But she is rocking the Beetlejuice stripes. Another shout out to A. Brightman. A. Brightman in the house. A. Bright Monster, as you online weirdos know him.
True.
Yeah.
So that is so cool. Like, how have you two been working together in the pandemic, but you're still, like, actively writing, right?
Kind of the same way we always have. We're very, he does a task and I do a task, and then we mush those two things together and then we kind of start picking it apart. So we don't need to be in the same room when we collaborate. And the stuff, it's not like we're starting a new thing right now. We're just continuing the stuff we've been working on. So it's not so hard to kind of pick up where we left off, but it was really difficult initially during the pandemic or during this quarantine period to start feeling self-motivated enough to even like want to open your laptop and like open a Word doc and read and like write. And like sitting at the piano was such a chore. Mm-hmm. And now I, you know, a part of that was because I had COVID-19. So I was quite sick for like the first 4 weeks of this. But then coming out the other side of that, you start really feeling fueled by the importance of not what you're doing, but the importance of your duty as an artist. And I speak about artists as if they are, and like, I don't want to say this, and I've said this in a few like live Zoomy StreamYard type of platforms, but I don't want this to come off in a way that is me equalizing what we do with first responders or any other type of hero that is doing their job right now. But what I am saying is the world is going to need, humanity is going to need what the arts bring, especially when this is all over. People are going to need human connection. People are going to need stories because it offers this escapism. They're going to need something to relate to their lives so that their life doesn't seem so out of whack and feel a lot less alone in the world. That's what theater does. That's what the arts do. So as long as it takes you to get motivated, that's fine. But once you do get motivated, I'm saying this to all artists, start writing. Just whatever idea, even if you go, it's a stupid idea, I bet everybody's doing that. Write it down. The way you're going to tell that story is different than any way that somebody else might. And therefore, it is worth pursuing in an artistic pursuit. Get your surplus of creative goods together, because once this is over, we are so needed in the sense that I feel like we should start looking at ourselves as an essential worker once this is over. That is not me saying artists are essential workers too. Because no way am I saying that. But what I'm trying to say is give your work and the things that you're creating for the humanity after this, give it a lot more validation, give it the importance it deserves, and keep writing. It's easy for, artists are very sensitive people. We wear our organs on the outside.
Yeah.
It's easy to get sensitive. It's easy to get discouraged. So I'm just reminding artists, be the strength that you are, that you see in your work, be that strength and put it to the page. That's all I want to say. Sorry.
That was beautiful. No, I think people really need to hear that.
Whoa. Whoa, I just blacked out for a minute. Oh my God. Whoa. Was I just saying something? Interesting. Right.
It is true. And I will give the validity to right now, what are we all doing? We're watching TV. We're reading books. We're listening to music. We're watching these 54 Below shows. Like music, artists, like all that stuff is possibly the most important right now. Because 100%.
Yes, we do. We need it, whether we want to admit it or not, whether or not it sounds like a necessity based purely on description. Netflix doesn't sound like a human necessity. When you go, it's a thing where you can binge watch and like waste life and like waste time and like, you know, it doesn't sound like that. But the content some of the people soak in, it changes lives. Stories change lives and they redirect the path in front of us. So we always got to remind ourselves of that. Keep writing, artists. Keep writing. Keep practicing singing. Practicing too. People, like while things are shut down, I get nervous for performers that they're not getting use of their voice and they're not, you know, working on their chops. There's ways to continue to hone, you know, so don't be totally off the clock is what I wanted to tell people.
Just stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's actually how this whole thing got started to begin with was, you know, there were all these events that I wasn't able to cover. And the first week was kind of in that zone of like, well, there's so many people doing these live interviews and these live concerts and like, where is my space? I don't want to like overwhelm everyone when it first comes. But I think like a week or two in, like I messaged Alex Brightman, I messaged Joe Iconis, like I messaged these people who I've worked with, which is also like absurd and so cool. And they said yes. And I'm like, oh, maybe there is a venue here. And it's really cool.
Absolutely, man. See, when you put it out there, it's not surprising once it starts happening.
Right.
Because you already knew it was going to happen. That's why it's out there. Right. Manifest destiny, baby!
All about that. All about the manifest destiny. It is so, that is like my thing right now. I covered the Tonys What? And now I'm going to cover it for B-Way Show.
Come on, that's what's up. That's what's up. She's an enterprise, y'all. If you want her to come to your event, you got to get in touch with her publicist, y'all.
She's a
big deal. She's a big deal.
You know, this whole conversation is just this, like, nice ego boost, so thank you so much.
I figured that's why you had me on. Yeah.
Totally. So I want to, let's get back to you. I love talking.
Yes.
So it's kind of a funny story.
Yeah.
Love that. Tell me more about seeing the production that we saw, like, at 54 Below.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about so many serious topics, but also, like, makes you feel more comfortable talking about it and destigmatizing.
Yeah.
How did that come up as such an important, like, story, and what feedback have you gotten?
The only feedback we've gotten based on that concert has been really positive feedback. We've also done a couple industry readings, and we've gotten notes, and there's fixes and there's changes, and we're all working toward making it a really good one piece, one show that works on the stage. The reason this is such an important show, and I think it hit me at the concert, I didn't realize the reach of the novel. I didn't realize the importance of the novel outside of my own virtue of it, like outside of my own thought of the novel. I didn't really put together, like, oh, it must mean so much to everybody else too, just because it meant a lot to me. I never put that together.
Yeah.
At that concert, there was all these fans, like not my fans, not Alex fans, like Ned Vizzini fans,
who
came, and they all brought their novels for us to sign. So when I kind of saw that, and then I saw the fan art and things and people getting some of the lyrics tattooed on them, I'm starting to realize that there's a reason that there's a snowball effect happening, and it's because the source material serves as a Bible for some people. And it really does. And that certainly was my connection with it, is the book reads as if I wrote it. It feels like a story that is so clearly personal to Ned Vizzini. It is semi-autobiographical. He went through his own stuff. Rest in peace, Ned Vizzini.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't think there's ever going to be a time when it's not important to not just make note of mental illness, not just touch upon it and make sure that we acknowledge that pharmaceuticals are a part of a life and that the effects it has on a family. You know, if you really get finite with it next to normal, we talk about this family and that what mental illness did to that family. We talk about depression in Dear Evan Hansen and how that affected this boy and then the outcome of all the decisions he made because of that. What this covers is perspective in a way that I don't think any piece that covers mental illness really gets across. This is about a boy who doesn't have a bad life. His life doesn't suck, but to him, he sucks at living life. And that is a very key twist to something. When everybody thinks there should be a way to explain depression, there should be a way to explain anxiety or anything like that, any of those on the surface mental illnesses, it's almost impossible to explain it unless you can't get the empathy that you require unless they're also going through the same thing as you. So imagine feeling completely alone. And then it's kind of a funny story. He goes to the psych hospital. So seeing people older than you who have dealt with this their whole lives and how they've had to navigate their lives, how that influences a teenager coming out the other end of that is immensely profound. And what I really like about the book and what I really like about our musical, and I think this might be the only musical in history that does this, there is zero resolve. There is no, well, we planted his trees and then they grew and that's how I'll remember him. There is no, I feel better and this is what I learned from being in there. The whole thing ends with, I'm still not okay, but that's okay.
Right.
And I think that is the point that needs to get across, that it is okay to not be okay. These idea of mental illness, like next to normal being such a big deal when it came out because mental illness is so taboo.
Right.
And now we're after Robin Williams and a lot of celebrities are being more open about it. It's so good to keep the dialogue going and normalize what people are going through. At least not stigmatize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the term crazy, the term retard, the term tranny, all those things get thrown around. We don't know how it affects people. And I think this is a really, it's kind of a funny story, is a really interesting look at how to navigate people's emotions when you don't know what their emotions are.
Yeah.
And it's been a blast to write. It's really been an amazing experience to write. And every time I finish a song, it's like your shoulders drop.
Mm.
And you're like, I feel the weight of the song. I feel the importance of this when it goes out. That's certainly not the case with every musical, with every song, with every whatever. But with this one, I feel the importance of it because I get that validation from fans and viewers and listeners that what Alex and I have already started doing is the right direction for the people that this book speaks to.
Right. Exactly what you were saying, that it's like, what is a normal day and what would happen if an average kid who was feeling like this went on that journey and it didn't make it seem like it was such a big thing. It's just like, this is life. And the line that really stuck with me is, I empathize with salmon.
Right.
They're going upstream, and that you feel like if you go out of line just a little bit, that you're going to mess up the whole
system. You can't get back in. Exactly. Right. Right. The idea that the blame gets put on you for any sort of disruptiveness in life. You know what I mean? You think that you think it's all because of you. I just reread the book. It is so good. It is such a good book.
I'm going to have to read it now.
The opening line, it's the same as our show. The opening line pulls you in. The first line is, it's so hard to talk when you want to kill yourself. That is the first line in the book. You know what I mean? How does that not make you go, what? What is this kid's story? You know?
Totally.
Wow. So yeah, it's exciting to bring something with that much weight to a musical stage. People don't think that shows like that can sing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Damn them all! I'll prove them wrong. They'll see. They'll all see.
Yes. Yeah. And like the song, the question song, I absolutely love that. And
thanks.
Like Seinfeld or Friends. Now that's my kind of question.
Is that your kind of question, Seinfeld or Friends? I'm asking you right now for real.
Friends.
Friends, okay. All right.
Yeah. How about you?
I think it depends. It depends
on
the year.
You have to choose.
I know I have to choose. I'd say more consistently Seinfeld.
Okay, that's fair.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah.
There's something about George Costanza's very short fuse that I can totally connect to.
Yeah,
everything is just, yeah, the whole world is crashing on this man. I love it so much.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it is. It's so good. Watching Friends now as someone, well, now I live in Washington State until COVID's over, but
right.
Living in Queens, and you're like, no way could they afford this.
No, especially Joey, the out-of-work actor. What's he doing in an apartment in the West Village? There's not a chance in the world that will work out. And Phoebe, she's a masseuse? She has an apartment in the West Village? That's crazy.
It's absurd. I know. I love the absurdity of it. It's so great. Yes.
It's just joyous. I love all that shit.
Yes. And people people are all saying like, yes, Jack's like, yes, yes, yes. Kimmy, sometimes I sympathize with Sam. And yes, I love that line. It's such a, there's so many good lines in this. Like just to compliment you a little bit on this. There's so many like good one-liners or good ideas that you're like, oh. Now that you say it like that, that is how I feel. But I couldn't put it into words. And I think that's also the beauty of music and art, is that you have this feeling, and maybe you felt alone, or maybe like I have really bad anxiety, and Alex Brightman and I like spoke about that it's actually more common than not that you have anxiety, right?
Right, right. But for some reason over years, society has deemed it like weird if you're experiencing those things. When the truth is, I think it's more common that people are experiencing things of that nature, you know?
Yeah. Delaney says, I love that book so much, and that's why I'm so excited for the musical. So there's clearly a lot of...
That's Delaney Armatrudo. She was in the concert. She played Noelle in the concert. So that was her singing the question game.
Oh, amazing.
If that's her. I don't know if that is the same Delaney, but if it is, hi, Delaney.
And if not, hello, other Delaney. So
yeah, if it's not, what's up, Delaney? But I think it might be. So hi, Delaney. It's nice to be here.
There's a good chance. There's a good chance. I don't know if you can hear it. My dog is like scratching to come in, and I'm going to let him in.
God, do it.
I feel
Please.
Really bad.
Do it. Well, guys, it's my show now. I am going to take this over. Let's all talk about which Sesame Street. Oh, hi. What's up?
Oh, hi, Flimbo. He's just going to chill right here.
What's your dog's name? Slimbo?
Slim. His name is Slim and his sister is Shady.
Oh my God, Slim Shady. I hate you guys. Hey, Slim.
Yeah. Live it
Slim
up.
Shady. Yeah, dude. Be comfy.
Hey, Slimbo. Okay. I like to call him Slimbo. That's like my name for him.
Listen, he's your dog. You're allowed to call him whatever you want.
Very true.
That's true, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm going to put this back right here. And then, so let's talk a little bit about We Aren't Kids Anymore.
Let's do it.
How was it A, like, releasing an album in quarantine, B, and tell me, like, the whole journey of that.
Sure. I was really, like, could not get out of bed, could barely open my eyes, completely sick when we released the album. Having trouble breathing, like, it was bad. So releasing it was a good spirit lifter selfishly for me, because I got to see the response of, you know, of what people were thinking when it went out. I hadn't really listened to the songs in succession ever once, maybe, really, truly, in the way that it kind of played out in the album. So like a week after it came out and I went on a walk and I just finally listened to the album all the way through, I realized that this is kind of what we were talking about. Like, you don't realize when I wrote those songs, I wrote some of them thinking there's no way this is going to connect to people because it's how I feel. Right. And I'm writing it because I feel alone in those feelings and I just need to get them out. So it really just felt like a diary entry rather than a piece. Mm-hmm. And my manager, Erica Rothstein, saw that there was a potential of this fuller stage thing. I thought it could be a review, a concert, you know, something really relaxed. But she saw this as a stage thing with a bit of a through line. And we got a director named Ilana Toplitz. And she is so effing talented. And we saw this production of it on its feet in Virginia last summer. And when I finally saw this workshop production of it, I was like, oh my God, we're not releasing an album. We're releasing a cast album. And that's where the excitement really came in putting it out during this time is, again, you create this boiling excitement of once we're done, this licensability here, you can take this show, get the album, soak it in. And then when we're done with all this, produce your own version of the show. And I think these songs being semi-autobiographical, all the way autobiographical, was going to hold it back from being something universal, but it's done the exact opposite. And like the response it's gotten is so beyond me, which is kind of how I feel about anytime somebody likes anything I ever do. I'm like, wow, what? Oh my God, why? But it's, I think it was an important time to release something new. I think we did it at an early enough point in the quarantine where it gave people hope that there's still going to be things made in the world. And I think that the material, I think that these songs and the performances, my God, Lily Cooper, Bonnie Milligan, Colton Ryan, Raymond J. Lee, Nicholas Christopher, you can't get better than that.
Oh, good.
But the way they delivered the goods, the way they delivered these songs really made it tap into everybody's life in some way. So I think it's, I just feel proud of it. And I feel very excited that it's out now for a different reason. I would have been excited about it if this weren't going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, the quarantine kind of adds certain significance to the excitement of the release.
Definitely. Yeah. And it also made me think, you know, hearing the What I Love About New York song, and then thinking about like, oh, those are things that I loved or hated, but now I don't even get that. And so it's so
that song has a hugely different meaning, because obviously it was like this complaint to New York City,
right?
But now it's like a love letter to New York. It's weird how that song hits me now, because obviously I miss being on a subway. I'll just say it, I really do. I miss the New York things.
Yeah, I miss the like running through Times Square as you're about to be late for a show. If you don't print through, and then it's all kind of like a jigsaw puzzle, and you have to know exactly like the maze to go. And
right. Yeah, I like treating it like a video game when I'm walking and there's people in front of me. I'm like,
gold points. No, where'd you go?
Working.
Maybe. Hey. Oh, good.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay, great.
Yes, excellent. So,
she's a one-man operation. She's doing this all herself. That's real entrepreneurship. That's real gumption. She doesn't have a director or a producer. She's pushing all the damn buttons herself. Lay off her if the sound gets fucked up. Come on, damn it. Give us all a chance.
Thank you, Drew.
You got it. I'm fighting a good fight for you, hon.
I love it. I feel it. Let's take a break from this chatting and let's hear a song.
Okay. Well, I just happen to have my guitar right here, Sho.
Weird. So convenient.
It's like we discussed that maybe I should play a song. And it doesn't matter what I play, right? It can be anything.
Whatever your heart desires.
Well, my heart desires this song. I wrote the song a while ago. It's called For a Minute. And it's about traveling, which you can't really do. And it's about making out with people, which you can't really do. It's about sharing a joint with people. You can't even do that. What is the world right now? You can't even share a joint with your teacher or uncle or friend. Anyway, gather around, kids. This song's called For a Minute. Remember in London, how the night became the rays, like so much louder than the day we had. Got bomb information, but lost and dumb and young and dumb, full of sex and drugs and dumb. Made out and stay well, we made out till morning, we made sure to be, yeah. Coming back down for a meeting, how could you see where you get it? I got a personal joint with your name on it, burning it down with flame. Try to just breathe for a minute, maybe we'll try to begin it. Hey, it might be something crazy, but baby, you fill me up with love. All right, oh darling. When I'm back in town, my dearie, no, oh, darling. If this ship goes down, I found you, let's pretend it's perfect till tomorrow comes. Chicago, how the night became just you and I. Wrong man chasing fireflies. Kicked out of the party. I went lost and dumb and young and dumb. Of sex and drugs and dumb. We made out in stairways. We found honey houses. We made sure to be, yeah. Coming back down for a meeting. How could you see where you get it? I got 17 hours until I catch my flight. We're burning it down in flame. Try to just breathe for a minute. Maybe we'll try to begin it. It might be something crazy, but baby, you fill me up with love. Oh, no. Oh, darling. When I'm back in town, my dear, it's love. Oh, no. Oh, baby, if this shit goes down, I found you, let's pretend it's perfect till tomorrow comes, whether near or far, no matter the distance, cause that's where you are, you feel like you know one known and there's something to tell me, so please tell me, tell me before I. I'm back down for me. I gotta see where you get it. I got a personal joint with your name on it. Burning it down with the flame. Try to just breathe for a minute. Maybe we'll try to begin it. It might be something crazy. Baby, fill me up with love. Oh, darling. Oh. If this shit was down, I found you. Not all. No. Oh, darling, sit this shit down, I found you. Ooh.
Yay, bravo, bravissimo.
Yeah. It's that lukewarm smattering of applause from one person that I really enjoy about performing. Okay. I hope we never have venues again, and it's always just one-on-one with a screen. It's the same fulfillment, I promise.
I bet you can feel the, yeah, standing ovation.
Yeah, all I heard up here was like chants for more and like people throwing their underwear at me. Yeah, amazing. Coins, roses, coins.
Here, change my money.
I remember us seeing that in Pinocchio. Like, Pinocchio finishes I Got No Strings song and dance. Here's a Pinocchio reference. For his I Got Strings dance, and then he does the dance, and people start throwing coins at him. I'm like, that would hurt so crazy bad, getting pelted with a sharp disc of metal.
Like, thank you for the idea, but no.
That was a performer who invented paper money. It must have been. He goes, you know what? I'm really tired. I'm really tired of getting hit with these copper discs. Yeah, the gentle nudge of a crumpled up piece of paper worth $5.
Yeah. Especially in the actual case, must be a lot better to have it in the...
Yes, absolutely. Carrying heavy and then the shaking around and scratching up the instrument. The whole thing, absolutely.
I don't know if you can hear it. Slim has decided that the best place to sit right now is right in front of me.
Yeah, Slim! This is Slim's show, too.
He's a part of this. And everyone is giving you the clapping emojis.
Yay,
and
thanks, everybody.
So everyone's cheering you on at home.
That I feel it's felt. I appreciate all the love.
And speaking of, performing in front of a crowd, probably the most opposite of this was when you were performing in Times Square.
Yeah, last year, the last few years, they've done this thing called Broadway Buskers, which is a really wonderful thing. I think it raises money for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. I think it does. Maybe it doesn't. I have no idea. I assume everything I'm doing is giving money to some charity. Anyway, but it's an amazing thing where they have two singer-songwriters kind of within the Broadway community do a set live in front of all of Times Square. And it's kind of an amazing thing. You have a built-in audience of hundreds and hundreds of people. And most of them sit engaged and totally enjoy your thing. And it's one of the things we're going to be missing this summer. But we're doing a songwriting thing. I don't know. I said yes to it a while ago, and I'm still getting the details on it. But Broadway Buskers is back in some virtual sense, but not in the same fun, live, outdoorsy kind of way.
Yeah, I was just re-watching the video because I realized I put it on Instagram and I didn't put it on YouTube. So I was like, oh, I'm going to throw this up on YouTube right before our live chat. And those two kids were so cute.
I'm friends with the mom of those two kids on Instagram now because of that concert. She was so sweet. They're all very, very, what a sweet family they were.
Yeah, and if y'all watching at home didn't see that, this little kid started playing along to the piano, and then
he was miming, air piano in front of me. He was all about it.
And she was dancing. It was just my heart was bursting with joy. It was so beautiful.
It was a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. It was the cutest thing. What a great way to wind the summer down last year. It was great.
Yeah, for sure.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So, let's talk. We're just going to keep going on and on. So, and the show goes on and on.
That's fine. I got no plans after this except for drinking alone. So, this is great.
I feel that. I have my quarantini in a chalice.
Oh, wow. Is that really an alcoholic beverage you have with you right now?
No, this is sadly just sparkling water. But later,
it's going to be...
Gin and green tea.
Gin and green tea. And then what? And then you don't sleep? What is that?
Oh, good. Gin and green tea. Just watch some shows. and then have some ice cream. That's like a good night.
I really like how you described a perfect night. Have some gin and green tea, watch some shows, the vaguest thing in the world, and then have some ice cream. It's a great night.
Great night.
Babe, you're turning 30. What do you want to do for your birthday? Oh, I don't know. Just a little gin and green tea, maybe binge something, and then some ice cream. Low budge.
Low maintenance. Doesn't that just sound like the best 30th birthday?
I'm not going to complain about it. My 30th birthday was so weird. I cut my thumb. I was like in the middle of like cutting bread for people to come over, and I got 6 stitches in my thumb instead. And that was for like this before party, because then the big party was happening afterwards. I was 3 hours late to my own birthday party because I was in the emergency room getting stitches, and everybody stayed. Everybody, there was like 100 people that I didn't even know, like all showed up and hung out and kept drinking. I got cornered by fans I'd never met before. They just came to my birthday party. Like, how did this become public knowledge where this was going to be? It was wild.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, I hope my 30th is cool. That's in 2 years.
Yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be as cool as a little gin and green tea, some TV show, and some ice cream.
Some ice cream. Yeah. Maybe it'll even be a Broadway show at that point.
What? God, you know, from your mouth. You know, I think it will be. 2 years from now? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
It better. At that point,
We wouldn't do your 30th birthday like that. We'd make sure you had some of this. I'll talk to President Billy Porter, and we'll get the Avengers squad of Broadway together, and we'll make sure it's all right.
That, you have just hit all my watching posts, and then look, I am a comic book nerd.
Oh, man, the nerddom does go in another direction outside of Harry Potter, though. Very cool.
Yeah, big fan, big fan.
Big fan.
So let's talk about the morons a bit.
Sure.
With Alex Brightman, F. Michael Haney, and Andrew Kober.
That's right. Let's do it. What do you want to know about the morons?
Like, how did that start? How did you come up with the name? Like, watching those YouTube videos have been so much fun.
Thanks so much. It started at the Drew Gasparini shows. They were my pals, and like we've all been best friends for a very long time. And when I started doing concerts of my work, they were always the first people I would ask because they were my friends. And they happened to be crazy talented, each one of them. You know, most people know Alex from what he's done on Broadway. F. Michael Haney is a force to be reckoned with. He's done a lot of Broadway shows. He was just Olaf in the tour of Frozen. An uber talent. And Andrew Kober has been, I think, in every Broadway show since 1971. So he, collectively, they're just such a pool of talent, and we were all buddies. So it just started with what makes us laugh. I would be here being like, what would be funny? Would it be funny if Alex was a Jewish member of the KKK? And I go, that would be funny. And I write it into a song, and they wouldn't even be like, I don't know if I feel comfortable doing this. They'd be like, okay, yeah. Like, it's ridiculous. And I think the humor of it works because they know we're genuinely nice people and good guys, and what we stand for and what our artistic mission statements are very love and outwardly hopeful and encouraging and optimistic. But when we're like the morons, we're kind of awful versions of ourselves on stage, which is why we have so much fun doing it, because we get to be these ulterior versions of ourselves. And it's a joy to do it. We started doing stuff in like 2012, 2011.
Yeah.
And they were in every single one of my concerts until our careers started getting a little too busy to always be there. And we've done some strictly morons shows. We filmed a pilot called The Morons. The name The Morons came from, there's some debate about this. I don't know who thought of the name, but I think it was Mark Summers, TV's Mark Summers, the host of Double Dare famously and Unwrapped on the Food Network. And he's a good buddy of mine and the other guys. And I think he called us the Morontourage. And then we just kind of like shorted it down for the purpose of this pilot we were filming. And we just called it the Morons. And then we just, it was in Playbill. Like, these are the morons. I don't know. Like, it just kind of was a thing. No one was like, we're the morons. Call us the morons. It was just like, we're the morons. I don't know.
And very the M strange. In parentheses.
The M in parentheses is because in the pilot that we were writing, instead of writing the morons go outside, the morons, you know, for stage direction or whatever, or scene direction, we would just put an M in parentheses to say that was the group. And then F. Michael Haney made us all hats with the M in the parentheses. And then there's a bunch of videos with the M in the hats, and there's pictures and So I think that took on its own little life. And I love the fact, like, we hardly ever get to, well, now especially, we hardly ever get to see each other, but we hardly ever get in the room to create and do the thing we used to do all the time. And thankfully, it's because our careers are in certain places in our lives. Like, Cobra's got kids and he's got a house and the whole thing. And it's just harder to find time. I miss them so much. We talk all the time. The Morons text thread is a very real, very insane land to go visit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
My goal with the Morons, because it's like funny story. You can't ignore what you're seeing online. And there's like a heap of people who weirdly love the Morons. And I think it's so funny because it was never this thing like we were trying to start a band and like get a fan base. But like the fact that one exists is really amazing. I would love to record a Morons album. I would love for it to be a live album so you can hear an audience react to the songs. Yeah. And I would love to do like when we're all established enough, my big goal is to do like two nights in a row at Town Hall in New York City with the Morons. A night with the Morons.
Damn, that sounds amazing.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Putting it into existence.
I love it. And I love the videos too. The comments that happen on the videos are like, those three guys are so funny. And their friend on the piano is really crazy. It's like, he's the guy who wrote the song. He's the guy, he's in it too.
Not like three in one, it's four.
They make it sound like I'm some accompanist who's like here to just like, I'll give you guys a bell tone and then you guys get started. It's like, no, we're like the collective together.
Right. Yeah. Do you ever find that with being a writer, but also performing, but also sometimes being on the piano while other people sing your songs, like that there's different like avenues?
I think people have a hard time placing exactly what to like describe me as. I kind of say I'm all the things. I go, I'm a composer, lyricist. I'm a singer-songwriter. That is how I would qualify me as a performer and a writer in one thing. And what I like about the amoebic nature of what my career is that you kind of have to see it to understand it. Like you kind of have to come to a show to get what it is I do. Because it's not always musical theater songs, you know? I write a lot of pop stuff. I'm in a band with my sisters. We have the comedy stuff with the Morons. It's completely hard to identify. And I think that's kind of part of the brand is an all encompassing type of event.
Yeah, I love how much you talk about your family for the album and your mom's little, like, we're so proud of you.
Oh, at the end of I Could Use a Drink, yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't want to do that, but for the record, at all. Not even a little bit. Yeah, I made her do it. I was because my sisters were both on the album. Mm-hmm. My brother wrote the foreword for the album, which was an insane, I have to go back and read that. It was insane and inappropriate. And I was like, everybody else is involved. I think there's even like pictures of my dad in the liner notes of the album. It's like, I gotta do something. So you'll be like the bonus track.
So cute. It's like, Mom, you're embarrassing me. But like, you told her to say that. I love, yeah. Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss, thanks. I'm glad you like that.
Yeah. So, okay. The Skittles commercial, I saw that you were a part of that. And I sadly didn't get to see it because it was this one night, one performance. Like, that must have been bonkers, right?
It was a very insane moment in my life. The whole thing was about 5 weeks long. And after 5 weeks, you got a full staged, written musical, costumes, sets, cast, orchestra. And not only that, you have a cast album recorded. Like, we did all of that. What it takes Broadway shows years to do. It took us 5 weeks to do.
Oh, my God.
And it was a lot of fun. I've never been more stressed in my entire life. The pressure was very high to make it not suck because there was so much publicity behind it with Skittles and the Super Bowl. Like, those are two very well-known things.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when you're the guy writing the songs, you don't want the songs to suck. And I'm happy to say that I don't think they did.
Yeah.
And it went off. It went better than anybody thought it would. It really, really did. And I think there's a bootleg on YouTube if people want to check that out. So the Skittles musical is bananas. Check it out.
Cool. I'm not usually a fan of bootlegs, but now if you're saying, I might have to check it out.
Listen, I'll make an exception for this one because it was a one-night performance. Like, it was never going to happen again. It wasn't like giving it away for other ticket buyers. It was like, thank God someone bootlegged it because that's the only proof that this happened.
I find it crazy that they didn't actually just film it.
I'm sure there's some archival stuff that they're going to use, but they can only use like 2 seconds at a time of for like montage advertisement clips. I don't know that they can release the full thing, but that would be amazing if they did want that.
Cool. I'll have to check that out. And Ruari has a great question. Do you ever have, or have you ever had trouble being willing to hand a song that of yours that you wrote for someone else to perform?
A couple times, just from sheer nerves. I had Beth Level sing a song of mine once because she came to me and was like, listen, if you ever need someone to sing your stuff, I was like, what? Yeah, oh my God. So I basically was like, how can I write like a funny theater song for Beth Level to sing? And I wrote a duet for her and Nadia Quinn, and it was a song about waiting for IKEA furniture to arrive. That's what I think the song is called, the song about ordering furniture.
Amazing.
So you can find that on YouTube. I wrote it literally just so I could have a song for Beth Level to sing. I was so nervous when I showed it to her because she didn't say, like when I sent her the track, she didn't respond with, sounds great, looking forward to rehearsal. There was nothing. She just wrote, got it, and then showed up at rehearsal. And she's very sweet. I think that was just like her email, that manner. But when we got to rehearsal, she was so, so nice. And then she was the one who was nervous about like fucking up the song. And she did the song and she was like so brilliant and funny. So that's one time, but never really. Like, if I feel confident enough to share a song at all, by the time I'm ready to give it to someone to sing it, I have faith that they're going to connect with it. Because it takes me a lot of hating myself and mulling over the song and, to, you know, chipping away at myself until I feel good enough to even share in the first place.
Right. That's fair. But yeah, I could only imagine, like, having this, your own baby, and then being like, here. Take care of it.
Well, I was just talking to my sister about this. My sister Chloe's a songwriter as well. And at a certain point, you can't exactly treat every song like this baby of yours, right? Because even if it feels like your best song at the moment, you as an individual are going to grow and become a better writer, a more well-versed human being, a more empathetic human being. You're going to be able to tap into new emotions that have been undiscovered. So that song that you're holding on to because it's the best thing you ever wrote and it means so much to you is not going to mean exactly the same thing to you in a few years. So the idea of saying, this is my baby and I'm scared to do that, it's really not like that. Like, this is a career based on an art form that you connect with, but it is a career. It's a job. So you have to know that you're good at your job.
Yep.
And it does take a lot of years of hating yourself and being told by others that you're not good and working on what you're doing and honing and honing and honing to feel confident in saying, oh yeah, I'm a composer. I can just compose a song. I can do that. You know what I mean? So even like my worst song nowadays, I've started to qualify as not a bad song. I don't think I've written a bad song in a long time, so I'm never really scared to, not to sound like an ego about it. It's just like you get good at what your job is, and I think I'm comfortable enough in my job that giving someone a song never feels like this moment, you know?
I think that's good advice for everyone because, you know, when I'm working on a video, like I want it to be the best video that I've ever edited or that I've ever recorded, or I hit the note perfectly, or, you know, like there's the reporter tone where you do this and then this. And, you know, you want it to be so perfect. And you realize like someone will watch it. It's a 3-minute video. They'll be like, that was great. And then they'll move on. And you poured your heart into it. And you're like, wait, okay, if I just like, I work hard on it because I know it's good. And then I let you enjoy it.
Right. You save the I worked hard stuff and the pats on the back for all the work you did. You save that for you because you can't expect everybody to give you the same validation you think the thing deserves, right?
Right.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
Well said. And we are rounding up on the time here, but I want to talk about the Karate Kid a bit.
Absolutely.
How did that get started? You guys just announced something and then COVID happened?
So the journey of Karate Kid has been a really, the day after I booked the Skittles job, I got a call that I booked Karate Kid. So like it was a very, really fun time. So this was like December of 2018, the end of the year of 2018. And it's through a company called Gorgeous Entertainment. They got the theatrical rights because they're owned by the screenwriter, Robert Kamen, who wrote the Karate Kid movies. He also wrote The Fifth Element and Taken and all the Taken movies. Way too many to name. He's all the Transporter movies. He's a huge movie writer. And he's writing the book with me. So it's like amazing to work with like a Hollywood legend and do the whole thing. But We started working on it December, or right after the Skittles thing ended. So about February of 2019, we had a first draft by the end of that month. We had a second draft by April. We had a third draft by June. We did a table read in June with Nick Cordero. Rest easy. Wake up.
He did. He woke up.
Wake up, but talk. But get there all the way. We want all the good things for Nick Cordero. He played Sensei Kreese, the evil sensei.
Oh, wow.
He was amazing in the table read. And then they sent me to Japan to study the culture a little bit out there. Because there's so much cultural, Okinawan cultural reference within the Karate Kid. It's not an Okinawan story. It's an American story. It's about an Italian kid from Jersey. So, like, it's not like they didn't hire the right culture to write this show, but they wanted to make sure that I was versed enough in the Japanese heritage and the Okinawan culture throughout this. So they sent me to Japan for 2 weeks. I got the best education of my entire musical life. I came back. And we've been Full Tilt Boogie. We did a performance in the Bahamas for people. We got a standing ovation. We did the industry reading of it with Kate Baldwin and a bunch of other wonderful people in February, right before all the shutdown and everything started happening. So we're still moving ahead. Nothing has stopped us yet, except for Broadway is closed. So we're just waiting until things open back up. But we're in good shape. The reading went so well. The excitement about the reading was really big in the room. And like, I can't even say it enough. Again, it's not ego stuff. It's like, I'm allowed to be proud, man. I wouldn't want to be the guy that fucked up Karate Kid, you know? And I'm really pleased to say that we are looking really good. It is a super exciting show. There were tears happening in the audience of our industrial reading because it's so much heart. Yeah. It's the relationship between a teacher and a student is such a sacred one, especially when it's a one-on-one relationship like this. And the familiarness and nostalgia that Karate Kid as a cultural piece of pop culture is exactly what people are going to need coming out of this. So I'm excited that our explosion onto Broadway is going to be at the tail end of this pandemic, when people are really going to be thirsty for something that makes you feel good, something that makes you well up, something that makes you feel, period. So I'm excited about it.
Oh, we are so excited. Yes, that's going to be amazing.
Yes, indeed.
So that's a perfect way to get to this wrap up. I always like to ask people if there's something for people to look forward to or any charities that they like to talk about and where they can find you, like on the DrewTube.
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, at Drew Gasparini, GASPARINI. You can find me on YouTube, and my website is thedrewgasparini.com, because that was the one that was available. So we got thedrewgasparini.com. So you can check out everything I got going on there. We're about to announce a series of masterclasses I'm going to be doing as kind of a theater camp over the summer, with biweekly classes for a masterclass of kids, with guest teachers, including Alex Brightman and some other friends that we're going to have come in. So keep posted for those announcements. Starting in June, I think, is when the first couple classes will start. Other than that, keep writing, artists. And I'm going to keep writing as well, because we need to keep this thing moving along.
Yes, we
do. You can check out We Aren't Kids Anymore anywhere you hear music. And that's please go do that.
And I highly recommend it. Like, I play it on Spotify on repeat all the time. Like, it just makes me feel good. This is just like a true endorsement.
It's so nice.
Just, you want to feel something. You want to feel like you're back with your family. You're back in New York. You're like all these things. Like, it's one of those albums that just makes you feel something. So amazing.
I appreciate you saying that. Thanks, Joe.
Of course. And The Show Must Go Online continues tomorrow with Ezra Minas from Jagged Little Pill. And then we've got a double, a Strange Loop combo Thursday, Friday.
Jackson! Yeah, baby!
So excited. Pulitzer Prize winner. What? Dude,
like, yes, man. That thrills me.
So I've been
a fan
of
his for a long time. That's really great.
Awesome. So yeah, Thursday, Michael R. Jackson. Friday, L. Morgan Lee. And y'all can check out the whole schedule on bwayshow.com. That's B-W-A-Y-S-H-O. And a quick little plug that I have a Showtreon. That's a B-Way Show Patreon. In case if y'all are like, whoa, I love what you're doing, let's hop on board. That's my little thing.
Yeah, go hop on board, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. And subscribe, and I will clip off your song as its own video so people can just watch that if they're amazing. Like, these two fools chatting for an hour, you know.
Yeah, if you just want to get to the music, I get it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, and thank you everyone for tuning in. This has been a blast.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for having me, show.
Thanks for listening to the 23rd episode of BYU Show, the podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review so you can be a spy on the inside for future episodes. Did you catch Show and Tell, the BYU Show podcast BPN launch party with Drew Gasparini, L. Morgan Lee, Kimberly Marable, and Fergie L. Philippe? You can watch it right now on BYU Show YouTube or by heading to bpn.fm/BYUshow-live. Since my conversation with Drew, Nick Cordero lost his battle to COVID-19. You can listen to his beautiful song, Live Your Life, and keep his legacy alive. Thanks to all the Showtrons, and special shout out to the Showstopper and Shonanigans levels. Judy Cotner, Naomi Cotner, Lisa Michelle Martine-O'Neill, Alyssa Wallace, John Benson, Ashley Stazak, Eva Fink-Clausen, Andy Gilderhus, Teresa Piliero, Julie Larkin, Cindy Howard, and Shannon Wheeler. If this was your jam, you can become a Showtrion. Head over to patreon.com/BYUshow. We do weekly trivia and monthly video chats. It's a fun time. Come check it out. Thanks as always to Kyle Braxton, aka Geddon, for these awesome beats. Jelani Remy for the beautiful intro riff. Alex Brightman for the Showtime promo. Chelsea Hill, aka Illustrating Diva, for the cool cover art. All the wonderful guests, and all of you for listening. Proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Broadway shows are announcing their new opening dates. While we're excited to see everyone get back to work, we must stay vigilant in our calls to make theater a safe space for everyone involved. We need reports on how companies will be enacting anti-racist, anti-transphobia, anti-ableism, and anti-abuse work. We can't go back. We must move forward. Wear a mask, get your vaccine, be safe, and let's take care of ourselves. We'll see you at the show.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.